Chapter 10.
"What's that?"
Shay sat up from where she was almost completely relaxed against my side, and she scrambled out of the love nest to try to get a glance at the monger that just flew over us. "Babe, wait," I said, and rushed after her, so I could at least wrap the blanket around her still naked form.
"Alex, I think my brother has sent some correspondence,"
she breathed, as she clutched the fabric around herself and eagerly watched the feathered monstrosity glide toward the manor. "Where are we, by the way?" I asked, as I finally looked around and established my bearings.
"We're just west of the manor,"
she said, and hurried back to the lounge area in search of her clothes.
"Where's my top?"
I followed her and shimmied on my pants while Shay kept trying to find her missing garment clad only in her silvery skirt. "Here," I said with a chuckle, as I slipped my tunic over her head and untucked her long hair from the collar so it could splay comfortably around her. "Okay, let's go." We skipped arm in arm through the little glen where the secluded hot springs was located just on the edge of Ithaca Estate, and I couldn't believe I hadn't known about the little treasure until now. But leave it to Shay to uncover this little gem and make it truly shine. We agreed as we jaunted back to the manor that we would both have to bring Zoe back to the love nest as soon as the occasion called for it. "Although I don't think she likes being submerged in water for too long, and I'm not even sure if she can swim," I said, and swung our clasped hands as we walked past the barn.
"I'm sure Zoe would much prefer a long nap in the sun,"
Shay giggled. "You notice she does that too?" I laughed. Before the Phoenix Woman could respond, a high-pitched scream startled us both and had us crashing back to Earth from Cloud 9.
"Help!"
The scream tore through the air again, and the barn doors banged open as the raccoon brothers nearly ran into us. "What's happening?" Bowden asked, and he scooped up his iconic painter's cap that had fallen off his head. "I don't know, we just got here," I said, as the four of us started off toward the manor at a run.
"We were just tidying up for the night when we heard it too," Mel graveled out in his rough voice.
"Help! Get it away!"
The victim shrieked again, as if they were being tortured. I almost thought the worst, but when we all piled into the entrance hall, I huffed out an exasperated sigh.
"Damon!"
Vel Rallo wailed from where she was crouched under the sideboard by the door.
"He's not a demon, you swat,"
Zoe grumbled as she watched the monger fly around with her arms crossed over her chest.
"It's evil!"
the cockatoo woman screamed again.
"Not evil, madam, just incorrigible,"
Jenner growled as he waved a butterfly net type thing that was proving completely ineffective.
"What does that mean, Mr. Jenner?"
Rylan asked as he tried to sneak up on the pest with a wooden crate.
"It means fiercely, obnoxiously annoying."
The koala man tried to lunge at the black crane mantis creature, but Igoric flapped his wings and perched on one of the arched rafters.
"Bakaw!"
the disagreeable beast said, and cocked its head a near 180.
"Let me get my throwing knives,"
Zoe said with a dark scowl.
"No, no, there's no need for that,"
Shay sang and marched to the center of the room with the picnic basket still in the crook of her arm. Then she rummaged around in the basket for what looked like a strip of roasted meat from the sandwiches she'd prepared for our date.
"Hello, husband,"
Zoe purred as I maneuvered my way to her side, while my phoenix wife strode determinedly to the center of the hall and pushed up the sleeves of my tunic.
"Are you chilled?"
"What?" I asked, as I struggled to tear my eyes away from the sexy image of Shay in my oversized clothes. Then I remembered that because my tunic was on Shay, I was, in fact, shirtless. "Oh, no, I'm good."
It seems as if you both are."
She grinned, like the cat that got the canary, even though I was the one who just got their world rocked by our nightingale's fiery passion.
"Ugh! Impossible monger!"
Shay exasperated, and shook her finger at the stubborn bird thing.
"Get down here right now!"
"Bakaw!"
Igoric squawked, puffed his greasy feathers, and landed with a solid thunk on top of Velralla's hiding place. She screamed, and a few of her white feathers from her crest floated to the ground in her agitation.
"Back, you cur!"
Bowden said, and brandished a broom he got from somewhere.
"Rock!"
Igoric said, as he hopped off the sideboard and right into Shay's arms.
"Oh, hush you!"
she chastised, and tried to retrieve the scroll fastened to the struggling creature's leg. The moment she took the scroll, The feathered nightmare reached down and nipped at her finger.
Ow!
Before I could do something like throw the fucking thing through the window, for example, Ryland beat me to it.
Hey! He yelled with a fierce scowl on his young face. Not the lady, you bastard!
Then he snatched the monger by its scrawny neck, threw it in the crate, and sat on top of it so it couldn't escape.
Hooray!
Shay cheered as I went over to her so I could check her now bleeding finger.
My hero.
Good job, Rye, I said, as I examined the wound that ran the length of her finger. Can you get some bloody liver from Arvid in the kitchen? Maybe that'll make it calm down.
I'll take it from here,
Jenner said, as he came over and stood on the crate so Ryland could run off to get the irritating thing something to eat that wasn't my wife's fingers. Are you all right? Bowden asked as he peered at Velrala still cowering under the table. He's put away now, there's nothing to fear. Then the taller of the raccoon brothers extended his hand like a proper gentleman and helped the agitated cockatoo woman to her feet so she could smooth the wrinkles of her plain yellow dress and apron.
Thank you,
she said curtly, and then eyed both of the brothers.
Who are you?
I'm Mel, madam,
the shorter brother said with a tip of his head. And I'm Bowden, m'lady, Bowden said, and bowed so deeply at the waist, his hat actually fell off, and he scrambled to put it back on.
I heard there was a new maidservant who came to live with us, but I did not know she would be so beautiful.
The cockatoo woman sniffed and turned her nose up at first, but then she glanced askance at the masked man, as if she was intrigued.
You have manners on you, farmhand, that don't go unacknowledged.
Bowden looked like that little bit of tepid praise could send him to the moon, and I exchanged amused glances with both of my wives. Then the koala butler cleared his throat and pulled a clean handkerchief out of his blue velvet jacket.
Yes, anyway, for your finger, Shay.
Oh, thank you,
Shay said as she took the cloth from Jenner. But she was much too distracted with Horace's letter to really tend to her finger. So I took it upon myself to try and staunch the bleeding while she read the letter. Don't squirm, I chuckled, as Zoe helped the one-handed Shay with the rolled-up message.
Horace sends his regards,
my phoenix wife informed us, and then began to relay the important parts of his letter for all of us to hear.
He is still safe, but still refuses to tell me who he's with. The frustrating thing. Also says he will meet us at the battle hall after the tithing ceremony the day after tomorrow.
Oh, shit, I said, as I had an existential moment of dread. The ceremony is tomorrow. Why does time go so much faster in Aventol?
Do not fret, husband,
Zoe's cool water voice said. And like it always did, her soothing timbre set me back on solid ground.
You have been preparing for the trials of tomorrow night, and you will do wonderfully.
Well said!
Jenner patted the catwoman on the arm, and then made a shooing motion to the three of us.
And in light of tomorrow's events, I propose we all get a good night's rest so we can journey to Gate Town. We must leave early so we can get to the magistrates before mid-epic.
Who all is going with us? I asked.
All of us, naturally,
Jenner said with a grin.
The tithing ceremony is Nater Isle's proudest event. Ambassadors from all of the other isles come to shed their blood for their people.
It doesn't seem like it would be enough to provide every island with tithes for the whole year. Season, I mused.
No, you are correct,
the koala man said, and looked like a proper professor as he stood on the crate, adjusting his monocle.
The top ashes of each island must replenish tithes at the pools on their own islands at least 3 times a season. But the first of these is the Great Tithing Ceremony, which is held at Aventol's first and oldest tithe pool, the one you saved from poisoning, my boy.
Oh, wow, I said, as my knowledge of Aventol culture increased with this little tidbit. So this ceremony is kind of like a New Year's celebration.
What is this new year you speak of?
Jenner asked. People all over the world I come from celebrate the start of the new season, I explained. We call seasons years.
Splendid,
the koala man said, and rocked up on the balls of his feet.
I do so enjoy learning about your traveler culture, Mr. Alex. One of these days you must permit me to document some things.
Any time, Mr. Jenner, I grinned, but then slowly frowned when a logistical concern suddenly occurred to me. How are we all going to get to Gate Town, by the way? Did we ever retrieve our busted carriage from the trail where it broke?
Not to worry, Mr. Alex, Mel said, and shifted on his feet. Bowden and I went back to where Miss Shea instructed us and retrieved the carriage. We just finished repairs on her this evening.
Yeah, I guess I really have been distracted, I said, and sheepishly rubbed the back of my neck. Thank you all for taking care of all of the details.
We even made a little buggy for our feed so we won't fall behind.
Ryland butted into the conversation as he came back from the kitchen with a bloody hunk of meat between his fingers for the hangry monger.
You are in good hands, sir, Bowden said, as he tugged the brim of his cap.
Quite,
Jenner added, and then clapped his hands a few times to hurry us along.
Now, trust us to finish up, Mr. Alex. Off to bed with you, Pip-Pip.
Whatever you say. I shook my head and held up both hands as I let my wives escort me up and away to bed. The next morning arrived with as much chaos as one could imagine when packing up the entire family for a camping trip. I didn't even attempt to meditate like usual because all of us had our separate duties to attend to, and it ended up being easier to just rendezvous at the carriage house for our last-minute powwow.
I think we need to set up a patrol this time,
Zoe said as she studied a map of our route to Gatetown in the pre-dawn dimness.
There will be a lot of foot traffic on our way, and the potential for bandits or mercenaries is high.
Good thinking, I said, as I loaded the heavy-ass shield into the back of the carriage and took one of the straps from Mel so we could fasten it to the back. Mel, would you and your brother mind being a part of the patrols? Patrols? Bowden asked, as he popped up from checking something under the carriage.
Count us in.
I scrutinized the eager raccoon carpenter with an arched eyebrow. He was fooling no one with the way he kept glancing over at Velralla as if looking for her approval, but the cockatoo woman was currently ignoring him as she inspected her nails with a bored expression. That's great, Bowden, I said, and tried not to wince in sympathy. For his part, Bowden seemed wholly unfazed by the snub and tugged the brim of his cap like usual, so I turned back to Zoe. What'd you have in mind, kitten?
We should start by having two at the front and two at the rear, until it's light enough outside,
my cat wife said. And seeing her get all tactical was hella sexy.
Then, after the darkness is no longer a hindrance, we go from two pairs to just one on a rotating basis, so there's at least one armed person at the front and back at all times. Bowden, Mel, what types of weaponry do you feel confident enough to wield?
My brother and I are quite practiced with a staff, m'lady, Mel answered.
I'm afraid staff weaponry is out of my set of skills and resources,
she said, and tapped her lips with one finger.
Not to worry, m'lady.
Mel half-bowed to Zoe, and then reached for two shovels attached to the cart hitched to the back of the carriage. I'd wonder, but I've seen the damage you and Bowden can cause with those things, so well done, I said as I rested my hand on the large pommel of my sword. You guys take the front, then, and Zoe and I'll take the back.
What about me?
Shay asked.
Yeah, what about us?
Ryland piped up.
We can patrol, too.
First of all, I'm not sure how well you can use your sling with your injured hand, Shay, I said with my arms crossed over my chest.
Oh, blast that creature,
Shay said, and scowled down at her bandaged hand.
I sent him back to Horace already. Good riddance.
And Ryland, we talked about you catching up on your rest, I added. I was kind of hoping you would take this opportunity to sleep on our way there. You're going to have to be the man when I'm occupied with the trials.
But I'm not tired,
the stable boy said, and then contradicted himself by letting loose a huge yawn.
Okay, maybe a little.
How's this? Once the sun comes up and we aren't so blind, then you can join the rotations, I bargained.
And me?
Shay insisted. Yes, you too, I conceded. And I felt this close to pulling the old don't make me turn this carriage around, even though we hadn't even left yet. Okay, are we all properly assigned and present and accounted for?
Yes, it appears. Wait, where's Arvid? Arvi!
The koala butler tried to stand up on the cart, but since he was so short, it didn't really help him see over the carriage.
Here,
the large sloth man rumbled, and loped his way toward us with his trusty hearth cauldron in his shaggy brown arms. We all then proceeded to watch Ithaca's slow-moving resident chef walk his cauldron to the cart, slide it to the corner with a drawn-out scrape, and then seat himself on the back, all at the speed of cold molasses. "How you doing, Arvi?" I asked, and the only response I got from the gentle giant was a sleepy blink before he flopped back like a falling redwood and immediately began to snore. Looks like I'm not the only person who's not a fan of early mornings.
"Let's go already!"
Rylan hollered. "What about the manor?" I asked as we began to roll out. "Will the walls be enough to keep everything protected?"
"Oh, fair question," Jenner said, as he climbed up to the driver's seat and adjusted Prosper's reins. "When you fix the lanterns, you use some of Mercedes' blessing inside you to fuel the protections, and thus, anything malignant or with intent to harm those who fall under your protection cannot pass the barrier."
"I'd love it if the wall could extend around the entire estate," I said, after I closed up the carriage house.
"If only, my boy. You witnessed firsthand the effect of overexpending your will. There is a limit to the lantern's power. For some reason, the broader the perimeter, the weaker the protection."
"Good to know," I said, and fell back with a slight frown. Being told I couldn't expand the wall didn't sit well with me, and I wondered if this could be a potential Herald Corps situation that a little research and not taking no for an answer could fix. It turns out it was a good thing Zoe suggested the patrols, because the forest was always creepier when it was dark. My catwife's ears kept twitching like mad at every little sound, and eventually I started to hear the telltale sound of another carriage trundling behind us. "Do you hear that?" I asked, and drew my sword for good measure.
"Yes,"
Zoe said, and armed herself with a handful of throwing knives.
"They keep trying to catch up with us."
Before either one of us could do anything, a familiar voice called out in the dark, followed by the sparkling lamplight from another carriage.
"Brightwoods!"
Asher Redburn called out and waved a hand from where he was on top of his own manipillar-drawn vehicle.
"I had hoped you'd be on this road."
"Hello, Dreadful," I said and waved a hand. "Would you like to caravan with us to Gatetown?"
"I would be much obliged, sir,"
the jackrabbit man said. Traveling seemed to be a lot less ominous now that we had our little troop who watched each other's backs. And when the sun finally rose, I was even allotted some time in the cab to meditate here and there. All in all, it was a pretty smooth road trip all the way to Gatetown, which was more than I could say for the last time we took a carriage ride together. Even Velralla helped a little by helping steer the carriage so Jenner could take a break every so often. The city itself looked the same from what I remembered of it the last time Zoe and I passed through this place on the way to the ruins. As far as general architecture went, Gatetown was a combination of a sea shanty slash trading port and a booming, steampunkian metropolis. The name was also apt for the town, given it was literally the town by the massive gate that let ships in and out of the island during the day and remained closed during the night. However, the main thing that stood out was how packed with people towing their own carriages and anchoring their ships in Gatetown's large lake harbors.
"Goddess, it's packed," I commented from my place in the driver's seat, along with Bowden and Jenner.
"Usually there are designated campgrounds for the event, but since the venue changed at the last moment, I'm not sure where the magistrate plans to host us all,"
Jenner said. "What about up there?" Bowden asked, and gestured to the large hill in the distance where everyone was directing their caravans to.
"Do you know where we go?"
Asher Redburn rode up next to us on a manipillar separate from his carriage. "I think we ought to just follow the crowd," I said, as I pointed to the grandiose estate perched on the top of the impressive hill. From our position, it looked like there was only one winding road up to the palatial manor, and it appeared as if people were parking along the switchbacks and setting up their camps just on the side of the road.
"I guess we just find any old place,"
Shay said with her head poking through the little window behind the driver's seat. "We might as well join the line," I said, as I scowled at one of the worst traffic jams I'd ever seen. I certainly didn't miss that from Earth. But like all horrible traffic jams, it eventually eased along until we came upon a relatively peopleless bend in the road that had an amazing view. "Let's set up camp here," I suggested, mostly because my ass was starting to go numb from sitting in the hard seat. "I know it's not closer to the top, but this is good, right, gang? Hey, Dreadful, want to combine camps?"
"Good idea,"
the jackrabbit man said, and directed his carriage to park next to ours.
"Then you and I must be heading up to Asher Vane's estate for the preparations."
"Sounds good," I said, and hopped down so I could stretch my legs for a moment before joining the bustle of unloading, and I walked toward the edge of the switchback so I could admire the vista. Multicolored pennants and flags flapped in the mild morning breeze, and bits of confetti swirled in the air and sparkled like glitter. Music and laughter could be heard as caravan after caravan continued to snake up the winding roads of the magistrate's private mountain, and a small smile spread across my face. Because we banded together, we took up enough space to where we had the ledge all to ourselves, which was really nice, and I took a huge lungful of fresh air and stretched out my back. It was a perfect day, but I was restless.
I have a bad feeling about this place,
someone said next to me and popped my little bubble of serenity. Somehow I get the impression you mostly have a bad feeling about pretty much everything, I snapped at Velrala, who, as usual, had taken herself away from the group to avoid work. The cockatoo woman arched a thin eyebrow and exhaled a stream of pungent smoke from her lips.
You feel it too, then?
She said, instead of being offended by my waspish attitude. And then she tapped the ash off the end of her reed-like cigarette. You shouldn't smoke that, you know, I said instead, so I wouldn't have to respond to her oddly perceptive comment.
It's my last one, anyway,
she said, and dropped the long cigarette on the ground so she could crush it with her heel. And then she turned to walk away. Vel, I said, and felt a little chagrined in the face of her empty sorrow. Hey, just because we might not get along, you do realize you're part of this group now, don't you? The blank expression the cockatoo woman had mostly been wearing since she came to live with us finally fractured some, and she looked at me with her coal-like eyes.
I'm not really sure what that means,
she confessed, and hugged herself as she looked out over the lake.
I see how you all interact, and it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know how to be a part of your group.
Well, the good news is you don't really have to try, you just are, I said. I know you're unused to experiencing anything but cruelty, but all I can do is show you otherwise. I'm good on my word because that's all I came to Aventol with. So you can trust when I say I will never hurt you or shut you out unless you do something that warrants that. But we already had that discussion.
Yes,
she murmured, and seemed to mentally chew over my words. You could make more of an effort, though, I said, but then nudged her a little to take any sting out of my words. I didn't particularly like her, but I didn't want to be a dick either. It wasn't her fault I was feeling more and more on edge the closer to noon or mid-epic it got.
I hardly know where to start,
she said, and then turned to look at the organized chaos now increased twofold by Redburn's brood. Dreadful and Jenner were chatting about some old book the Jackrabbit Man was holding in his hand, while Rylan and the two familiar-looking farm children set up troughs of water for Prosper and Redburn's manipillars. Arvid, it seemed, had also jumped into action and was already cooking something over a fire one of Redburn's young maidservants was feeding logs to, and the rambunctious raccoon brothers were continuing to unload while Zoe took inventory and gave instructions like a proper first wife. You just gotta jump in, I chuckled, and then led by example by waltzing up to the revelry and clapped my hands once. What can I do?
Husband, I demand your help with this frustrating tent.
Shay immediately commandeered my services as she popped up from a tangle of canvas and cords. I laughed and went over to my aggravated phoenix wife and observed how much of a mess she had made of the poor tent. What did the tent ever do to you? I teased, and helped her with the guy lines she was trying to unknot with her gimpy bandaged fingers.
It's this stupid hand,
she growled, and huffed when she finally gave up the task.
It's making things difficult. Once Horace has no need for the disagreeable creature, I rather think we should let Arvid cook Igoric in a stew.
Her cheeks were flushed with rage, and her crest looked a little fuller due to the heavy feathers on her head that wanted to puff up. But even though she was furious, the whole effect made me think of a pissed-off baby chick that fell into a rain puddle. It was kind of adorable. Let me see, I said. And between the two of us, we were able to split the work where she organized the parts of the large three-person tents, and I popped them up one by one. I didn't know we had these, I said, as I finished erecting the last tent. Each one of the colorful three-person tents had three rooms separated by additional panels of cloth, and I could tell, based on the other campsites around us, that our tents were of a far greater quality.
They came from Icarian,
Shay explained.
Bala always hated staying anywhere that didn't have an inn, but when the occasion called for it, he insisted on the best money could buy. The arrogant man.
Well, here's to our benefit, then, I said. And I tugged her into the tent after me, and then undid one of the straps holding up the flap for the doorway. It furled down just in time for me to dip my phoenix wife and plant a large kiss on her lips, as if I was some sort of Casanova.
Dad!
I heard a long whine, and I straightened up and glanced behind me where the tent's back door was still open. Rylan was glaring inside with a teasing grimace on his face.
Ew!
Brat. Don't you ew me, or I'll throw you off this mountain, I said, and rushed at my unruly troublemaker so I could sling him over my shoulders and spin him around to the sound of his startled shrieks of delight.
Don't! I don't want to die!
He hollered through his belly laughter as I marched closer to the ledge. Suddenly, a loud fanfare of trumpets made everyone on the mountain freeze. I set Rylan down and glanced at the top where the sound came from.
Come, Alex Brightwood, Redburn said as he turned to me. We must commence with the preparations.
I swallowed hard. This was it.